Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome. My name is Stuart Thompson. Welcome to our new show called Personal Transformation. This is great. This is fantastic. I can't believe that I'm sitting here talking right now, and especially with this issue about child abuse. First off, my name is Stuart Thompson, as I've stated. My show concept is about child abuse, and where we're going to go with that, we're going to cover all realms of meaning what it does to an individual over a period of time. And you know what? I'm as nervous as heck right here right now. This is my first time coming here talking about this, especially live like I am right now. And I am going to do my best I can not to make too many fumbles along the way, but please bear with me as I go through this process, as I feel that it's very important to get the word out about this issue. And I'm going to promote it a little bit more. And what I mean by promoting, I'm going to go on to Facebook, I'm going to go on Twitter, and we're going to let the word out that we are doing this show. I am going to be doing an interview with Art Lockhart. He's the founder of The Gatehouse, and The Gatehouse is where I got my new beginning, and that's what I'm going to be talking a lot about. And I have lots to say about it, what to start off with, but I guess dead air, here we go. Anyway, like I say, I'm fumbling along here anyway. What brings me to do this, why I want to do this show, is I've lived many, many years of self-destruction, and when I found The Gatehouse, it kind of directed me on the right path of, being able to actually figuring out who I actually am. And after lots of thought and process, personal process that is, I realized that, wow, I'm actually a human being. After all, I'm not a bad person like I considered that I was for many, many, many years. This is funny doing this. I would like to probably just jump right into the interview that I have with Art Lockhart, and he'll explain a lot more about The Gatehouse and what it consists of. And I'll come back and after I've gained my composure a little bit better and feel a little bit more relaxed. And right now I don't feel very relaxed, probably because I'm nervous as heck, and I'm spending more time thinking about what I'm not going to say and what I am going to say. So nevertheless, enough of that said, I'm going to start my interview with Art, and just bear with me, and we'll come back and talk about it after a little bit. Art Lockhart, I'm so pleased and happy that you are here, for coming here and telling us how The Gatehouse got started. I guess basically I'm going to jump right in with the questions right away, and to what possessed you or what you made you feel that you needed to start The Gatehouse?
Well, first of all, I want to say to you, Stuart, I think it's amazing what you're starting. To initiate this process is beautiful. So.
Thank
I want
you.
To thank you for that.
Thank you ever so much.
And what happened was I had finished a class teaching at Humber College, and it was on the issue of violence and abuse. And a student came up to me and asked to go for a coffee and said that they wanted to tell me something about what happened in their life. So we did.
Not at all.
But there was no place to talk on the campus grounds, so we went into getting a coffee, got in my car, and we just drove over from one of the buildings on the campus, the laneway, right, the driveway, as you come onto the campus grounds, and she began to tell me the story of her having been abused as a child. And she said that there was no place for her to go. When she did try to tell some people about it, they always, for her, they wanted to put her sort of a round peg in a square hole. They wanted her to make her fit what they needed. And she said, all I want to do is tell my story. As she was telling me her story, it was raining out, and the windshield wiper of the car was going back and forth. I just didn't want her to feel claustrophobic sitting in the car talking with me. And every time the windshield wiper went, there was this house right where we had parked the car. I could see it. It was old, dilapidated. It was boarded up. Roof had holes in it. And I thought, wouldn't that be an amazing place if we fixed it up, that people could come and tell the most terrible stories that have happened to them and find their voice and get strong again. So that was the initial piece that got me going on it. And then I found out that the City of Toronto owned the house. I asked them for it just to have it, and they laughed at me. And I struck a lease with them for $300,000, and I was short $299,000 and 99 cents. And so what we did was I gathered the community together, where we all contributed our time and passion and compassion to build the house. And so over a six-month period, it went from a dilapidated old house that had been abandoned for over 30-some-odd years to a house now that's coming up on its 16th birthday. And most recently, there's a calculation that over 20,000 people have been affected by the program and processes at the gatehouse.
Wow,
since
that's
that time.
Incredible.
So that's, and it's the only house of its kind in the country where children can come here and the police and Children's Aid Society do the investigation of the abuse right here on the site. We have the state-of-the-art room, one of the best rooms in the whole country.
Absolutely.
And it's a phenomenal thing. We also have programs for men, programs for women, programs for men and women together. We have programs for young adults together, and it's pretty remarkable, I think, and it's a real testament to people such as yourself. You have gone through the gatehouse, you're a facilitator. It's beautiful. So it's the spirit of everybody that comes to the house, and everything we do at this house is for free. There is no fee attached to anything. We often joke, it's really expensive to come here. It costs you a cup of coffee, and that's what we do.
And cookies.
And cookies, yeah. So that's how it got started.
That's great, Ari. I really appreciate you sharing that with us. I guess one thing would always come to my mind, well, with all this coming together, there must have been some real struggles.
There were.
I mean, not only with the government and getting like permits to do this and to do that, because you got to follow all these rules.
Yeah.
As an example.
Yes.
But could you give me some examples of things that some of your trials and tribulations that you had to fight to go through just to get this house open?
Just to get it open, first of all, was when we talked to the City of Toronto and trying to strike a lease with them. That was an obstacle in terms of the money. However, what we did was we created it so that our in-kind service, anybody contributed hours, money, physical support, whether it was painting, drywalling, that went towards the lease. So we were able to really get the house going with under $30,000 of actual money.
Wow.
And the rest was all in-kind service. Everybody contributed to building the house. So that was a beautiful thing. And that's related to community engaging in the taboo of, what is a taboo? Childhood sexual abuse. It's something we don't like to talk about.
Where do you see the future of awareness with society? It's a two-part question.
Sure.
Where do you see the future of awareness with society in regards to this issue or sexual abuse?
Yeah.
And where do you see the justice system?
So this thing with awareness for a minute, that I think what just on that point alone, books could be written, that if we all slow down enough, really slow down in our day-to-day lives and paid attention to children, young adults, children, adults, whomever, but we just pay attention to where they're at, how are they doing? Because oftentimes people will say, I've been holding on to this for years, to finally getting the courage to come forward. So the awareness is to be present enough, paying attention enough, that if something is going wrong in somebody's world, that we extend our hand to them in a gentle way to try to connect with them to see how they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most powerful things about healing is the idea of re-engagement. We need another human being to re-engage with to make the journey forward out of these depths of despair and abuse. But in our world, we're not very...
Where do you see the future of awareness with society? It's a two-part question.
Sure.
Where do you see the future of awareness with society in regards to this issue or sexual abuse?
Yeah.
And where do you see the justice system?
So this thing with awareness for a minute, that I think what just on that point alone, books could be written, that if we all slow down enough, really slow down in our day-to-day lives and paid attention to children, young adults, children, adults, whomever, but we just pay attention to where they're at, how are they doing? Because oftentimes people will say, I've been holding on to this for years, to finally getting the courage to come forward. So the awareness is to be present enough, paying attention enough, that if something is going wrong in somebody's world, that we extend our hand to them in a gentle way to try to connect with them to see how they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most powerful things about healing is the idea of re-engagement. We need another human being to re-engage with to make the journey forward out of these depths of despair and abuse. But in our world, we don't pay attention enough. That's why it's as pervasive as it is. We turn a blind eye to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to be able to talk about this issue of abuse as common as if you were talking about nutrition at school. Like finding a way that we can have this conversation and pay attention to what people are saying so that we can do things to help people and support people right at the outset. That's what we need to be doing, more of that. And
mm-hmm.
we've got to find a way to do it in such a way, and I don't know all the answers to it, but in such a way that it makes it so safe that somebody would come forward. That's what we've got to do around awareness. On the justice side of it, I hope someday, and we're trying now, we talk to different panels and committees from federal and provincial governments and so on about this and policing, that we can begin to look at other models beyond a retributive approach. In other words, if we focus just on the offender as this bad person who's hurt this other person, we put a lot of resources into punishment. And punishment that, in my opinion, doesn't really do anything to curb it at all. It's more of a revenge-based. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's just put the person away in prison and that's all there is to
it. Just
to
shut the society up.
Exactly. So, and that comes from this urban legend about the only people that do abuse are these adult men.
Or gays.
Exactly, right?
Exactly.
So all that kind of stuff, it's so horrifically wrong.
Wrong.
But we have this notion, so as a result of that, we just think, okay, put that person in prison. But if we slowed it down enough to say, people who do sexual abuse can be anybody. They could be a 15-year-old female babysitter. They could be a 10-year-old babysitter. They could be a 12-year-old brother who is molesting his 9-year-old brother. There, it's so many realms in this, right? Are we going to take that 10-year-old and put that person in prison? So justice. Justice means looking at things from, in my view, a transformative lens. In other words, I want to look at it and say, what is in the world of that person that would do this harmful behavior? That helps me develop a sense of empathy about the whole process. Now, this is really sensitive stuff, because I can imagine people getting angry. What do you mean? You're just going to let people walk away from it? And we're not talking about that. We're saying, how do you embrace that behavior in such a way that the person who's doing it, or even thinking about it, can move out of that stuckness of offending?
Yeah.
Like, how do you get out of there? And consequently, too, how do we help the victim, person who's been victimized, move out of that role of staying as a victim? That they can transform and say, I'm not a victim. I was a person who was victimized by these things, but my whole life is not going to be defined as a victim. If, however, everybody responds to me strictly as a victim, I can stay stuck. That's why, for example, at the Gatehouse, we never refer to people as victims.
That's right.
We refer to people as whole people. They're wholesome. They've got so many features and strengths. That's what we want to focus on. So the justice piece, I think is archaic. I think it's dysfunctional. I think what we have to figure out is ways and means for people who are even thinking about offending to come forward and say, I'm having these thoughts and urges, can I get some help? And so they help, they find a way to help that person so they don't reoffend or offend for the first time in their lives, right? Or a person who's been victimized by the offense, this offending behavior, who says, I just need a place to tell my story right now. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do anything other than take a breath and be able to talk as opposed to just giving information that says, we're going to go get this person. Because what happens if that information doesn't hold up and the person who did the sexual offending behavior is acquitted of the behavior, even though they may very well have done it?
Yeah.
What does that do to the victim? They're left in shatters, right?
They're victimized all over again.
All over again by the courts or whatever process.
Yeah.
So we want to figure out a way that says when this event happens, how do we all of us figure out a way to work with this so everybody can get stronger? And I think that may sound utopian or idealistic, but I think we have to at least begin to have those conversations.
And it hasn't.
Because if you think about it, men who were victimized as children, I was told by people who are professional people, nice people, really well-intended people out here in our city of Toronto, said to me, Arthur, you can't have a program for adult males who have been abused as kids. You can't have them in the same house that you have children coming to get the investigation.
That would be wrong.
Yeah, but I was told that. So that attitude was, that wouldn't have been real. In their minds, justice was, you don't have men connected to the gatehouse, right? So it's kind of a strange world that we live in that's so wanting and seeking out revenge,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to wanting and seeking out a sense of understanding, a sense of, let's focus on people's capacities to change their lives. That's what we really need to do. Pushing people away one way or the other
doesn't solve the issue.
No, it that kind of justice even keeps the person who's been victimized even more. I've seen it thousands of times. I have, and I've been doing this a long, long time, and so I've seen it live. And I see a person who finally sheds that role of being the victim, and it's like it's a real transformation. And one of it is they just start to see things differently, if that makes any sense.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So what about the justice system, though? Now, how do you feel, did you see, like, I don't know, maybe 5 years, 10 years, do you see any kind of transformation?
I always hope. When the Ombudsman's Office came out to the gatehouse, they were totally amazed at what happens here at the gatehouse, and they were really affected. And one of the representatives came out to the conference we just held about transforming trauma into triumph. And they were really amazed that one of the things that we even talked about, I mean, just imagine this. At that conference, we talked about people who had offended sexually, being with people who had been sexually offended. How do you have a conversation?
Hot topic. I remember being in the forums on that.
Isn't that incredible?
Very incredible.
And so, and the idea is to, again, start to shed some of these things that are holding us back. So in 5 years, 10 years, if there were more programs, processes that allowed people who had offended to get healthy, get on a path that's healthy for them and for everybody else, that would be really smart. Having a process where people want to participate, volunteer to participate, where a person needs to be able to say to the person who harmed them, that to let them know what that was like. I've been involved in those kinds of experiences and watched the transformation right in the room. When a person gets to say certain things, they're not held back anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're finally free of holding on to all that pain and anger, right? So, in our justice system, we don't allow right now for this language around forgiveness and empathy. We don't like that kind of word. It's in a retributive justice. So over the next 5 or 10 years, it is my hope that we can spend more time on those kinds of features, empathy, forgiveness, understanding of my own journey to get strong for myself. I'm not just a victim. There's more to me than just being a victim. If we find processes and create and collaborate together with all kinds of folks on this, I think we'd be incredibly healthy to do that. Our prisons are filled with people who have done other behaviors that have harmed people physically, or they've robbed, or they've done other things that would land them in jail. And when you find out their backstory, I always say this, there's always a story behind the story.
Mm-hmm.
Overwhelmingly, we find out about how they've been traumatized as kids and what it's meant to their lives, right? So you have people in prisons who have maybe have been sexually offended, but they're there because they've messed up in other ways because they were sexually abused as a child, right? And then you've got prisons with people who have sexually offended, but they keep going back. They're not getting the support that they need. So what do we do with the culture? It's a very tricky thing, but we have to have the courage to at least explore that kind of conversation, just to explore it.
Absolutely, and no one has done that.
No, and very few.
Or very few.
And that was exactly the feeling when we were building the house. How people would say, you can't build a house, it can't just be based by community. What do you mean you're going to have people who have been abused as kids helping people who later in their lives? Like, they're not strong enough to do that. They were victimized by abuse. How could they be of help to somebody else? I remember people saying to me, oh, that's like the blind leading the blind.
Mm-hmm.
They're great leaders. Blind people leading blind people, from what I've seen here at the gatehouse, they're astonishing leaders. So we've got to redevelop our view, right? Like somebody once said, true discovery comes not only from seeing new horizons, but developing new eyes. We've got to do that. And if we do that, whoa, I bet you we could do so much around this issue.
Wow, that's great. Let's talk about facilitating.
Yes.
Now, Can you tell me the process behind how you, okay, well, I was lucky enough to be asked to do it. Now, can you just maybe touch on the basis on how the process of getting the facilitators ready to do this sort of thing?
So at the gatehouse, fundamentally our process is that to get into the facilitator role, we invite that people have gone through the programming at the gatehouse, that people who, this is what we call it, an adult peer support, where you yourself have gone through the trauma of being abused. Not everybody has who is a facilitator, but most people are. So they've gone through the trauma of being abused themselves as kids. They're now adults. They go through our programs here, both for adult males or adult females, and then the co-ed program. They go through that process. Then they can say, I'd like to become a facilitator. And a facilitator is someone who realizes, one of the key phrases that we use is the art of doing nothing but doing it really well.
Listening really good.
Yeah, and that's right. Listening with the intensity of the other people who want to speak. Listening with the intensity of someone who would want to speak. In other words, the facilitator sets in an atmosphere that is so safe that anybody can start to talk about the worst thing in the world that's ever happened to them. And we have heard, as you know, and you've done it yourself, right?
Yeah.
Where people will say, I never thought I would say that in front of
Absolutely.
Anybody else. I can't believe I just said that.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. And then the freedom that comes from that experience. So the facilitator training is almost like a lot of a removal program. It's a removal of favored ways of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's a removal of preconceived notions about working with people who have been abused. It's just a removal of an attitude of saying, I want to be a helper, I want to do good, a do-gooder. That's not what facilitation is at all about. It's none of that stuff. We're not counselors, therapists, psychiatrists, or
anything. Peer-to-peer, that's it.
Yeah, peer-to-peer, where you can finally be in a room with somebody else who has that empathy, who can say probably the most two powerful words I hear in the circles that we do with peer facilitators, is when somebody else goes, me too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
right.
And so that when that happens, it's absolutely liberating. So that we go through an intensive 2-day training around that. So you've got people who've been here for maybe 30 weeks, plus the training that we take them through, and then we keep following up. How's it going? Checking in. Right now, we're even in the process of writing a book on not just the facilitator book that we have now, but more about lessons that we've learned as facilitators, and we're going to share that around the world with anybody running these groups, and it'd be fantastic. So if that answers the question.
Oh, absolutely. That's fantastic. Thank you. Is there anything that stands out? Okay, for example, for myself, you kind of described, I kind of already asked this already, but I'm going to ask you again, but is there anybody else in particular, is there any particular person that is kind of odd or whatever? I mean, I don't even like using that word odd, but
yeah,
that has gone through the process of doing the group and then doing the facilitating. Is there anything really stands out that one individual that
well, again, there's many. There are many people who have gone through processes and are talking. I'll give you maybe an example. Another example is a guy. As I mentioned, the house was all boarded up for about 30 some odd years.
I was hoping you were going to say the story.
Oh,
actually,
is that right? Okay.
Yes,
I'm
hoping you were going to say the story.
Okay. Yeah, okay, all right. So the fellow's name is Tommy, and he lives not too far from the gatehouse. Extraordinary guy, absolutely extraordinary. He, as a child, when he was having very difficult times and being abused, he would run away at night. And where did he run to and hide out at? This house when it was boarded all up. So when he found out that the house was turning into what it was turning into, he ended up coming to the programs, and he went through a couple of the cycles more than once. Like, that, again, is a real testament to him. So he just didn't come through it once and everything was great. He came through it, went back, and then went through the training. And now, a guy who used to hide out in the gatehouse, in the middle of the night, all boarded up, just making his way into the boarding, is now facilitating groups. Every Sunday, you could meet up with him here at the gatehouse, and I was in not too long ago, and you walk in, and there's an energy that's in that room, and I think it emanates from him.
Mm.
And so he went through horrible experiences growing up, really, really horrible experiences, and he contemplated things such as
suicide
and had different pathways that he went down, very dark places that he went down, and through the process he came out, and this is what he's doing today. And I remember him saying on the first day, it was we were sitting in the kitchen. And I said, oh, by the way, I've got to give you the key to the gatehouse so that you can, you know, be opening and closing up on Sundays. And I handed him the key to the gatehouse. And you know that phrase where people say, the key to the city or something like that? He got, his tears just came right up.
Wow.
And he said, this is the key to the house that I used to hide in at night.
That's just incredible.
That's
really, really incredible.
Yeah.
See, this is why I really want to do this program. This is a good example of what you're giving about transformation, is to show that I don't care how big of a hole you're in, you can find your way out.
Absolutely.
There's always a way out,
You
know, and this is a good prime example of that. Thank you for sharing that with me.
I'm glad to do it.
It's just an incredible, incredible story. Let's talk about Gatehouse International now.
Yeah.
Tell me about that and where it's going and where do you see it going in the future?
So what began with two people sitting in a car that day 16, 17 years ago has grown into the programs that we've mentioned, and we keep on going along. We now have students from the colleges and universities in Toronto that work with us at the Gatehouse as well. And one of the functions that they do, and this was actually initiated with another man who went through the program as well. His name is Mark. He's coordinating a lot of it.
Mark.
It's just incredible. So what he his background is in library research and on an international level. So we got talking one day, And that turned into having students, we've sort of sectioned off the planet Earth, if you will, and say, okay, there's South Asia, there's Europe, there's South America, whatever. This is North America. And their task is to find as many organizations and groups as possible. We've aimed for 200 countries.
Wow.
To see what they're doing around the issue of childhood sexual abuse in the way that we're talking about it, not just only about children, but about the whole continuum from elderly people right down to children, right? Exactly. So, and the premise is that we contact them, the students contact them, to find out about and to celebrate. We want to celebrate everybody. That has grown to having people from the Gatehouse going down to places like Ghana, Guyana, Bolivia. We're going to have people going to Germany, United Kingdom, and making connections with these organizations and having them come to Toronto to celebrate what they're doing. So what we want to do is get it, imagine if you're flying over the Earth and it was all dark, but then all of a sudden a light went on here, and then the light went on there, and then the light went on there, and so on and so forth. And all these lights represented people caring about other people who've been harmed sexually. And then the whole planet illuminates, right? That's what we're trying to do. And people will say, well, that's crazy. I mean, it's impossible. You're not going to get to 200 countries. Well, we've done a lot. We've had a lot of people say things like, that's impossible. You can't have a house that nobody knows how to fix up, or you can't have this or that.
Mm.
So now, and most recently, where you spoke at the last conference, we saw the panel of people who were speaking there. Like, they were from around the world,
South
right?
South America,
Europe. Yeah, Europe, England, South America. And so that it's happening. So it's beginning right now. It's just in the beginning stages, but we're already helping a place get started down in Bolivia. Like, who would have thought, right? But it's about the spirit of everybody, mm-hmm. right? That's the neat thing. Like, and especially, too, dealing with something that people just shy away from, right? Like, people don't want to talk about childhood sexual abuse. People, they'll be quicker to talk about issues around cancer than they will about abuse. And once upon a time, people didn't even like talking about cancer. Like, that was something you never talked about, right?
It's like AIDS.
AIDS. Oh, yeah. If you have AIDS, we're not going to talk to you. Let's banish you, right?
Yeah.
The same attitude prevails right now around sexual abuse. We banish people, but whether victims or offenders, we're really good at banishing people, shutting them down, right? So now the Gatehouse Network International is really, it's about everybody. It's about the idea of everybody can support everybody. That's what we want to do. And we're doing it. And the students that come here and are working on that, making connections every day on the internet with people and finding out, and they're blown away by what they're learning. Like, it's just, they're so excited. We just had one of our training manuals translated into Spanish.
Wow. That's incredible. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and that's going to be used down in South America. And so, but that, again, that's the spirit of everybody, right? Like, everybody works together, cares about it together, and it's pretty exciting. So it's growing. And next year's conference is going to be even more powerful.
So within talking that, now, how difficult was it to put these modules together? Even never mind translation, you put it into Spanish,
yeah.
But just for the men and for the women's and for the co-ed.
It comes out of the wisdom of the group, right? Like, that's mm-hmm. what we said. We would want to try to record as many things and ideas. We type it all out. So people are just talking, and we type it all out. We believe that everybody that walks into the house is not a client, is not a victim. We believe that everybody that walks into this house here is a whole person filled with unbelievable, untapped capacities to transform their lives. So with that framework in mind, when we sit in a group, we take down the notes, we put it on the computer, write it all up, and they become stories almost about what people have gone through. And then we talk about the processes that we decide to work on to get even more insight, as you said earlier, Stuart, more awareness about what's holding me back.
Yeah.
And that's what we write about. So it's pretty daunting sometimes to put the manual together, because many times we're just creating it as we go. And that
so
is
learning through the process.
Absolutely. And that's, so we're not really prescriptive, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we draw everybody's ideas out, and then we put it to paper and say, what do you think? And so, and that's where it's led us into some very sensitive areas, talking about forgiveness and anger and guilt and shame, where in the past people didn't want to talk about it, but now we're talking about it, right? And it's in the manuals now, so that's pretty exciting.
Very, very exciting. I found, like, I'm working with the manuals now for the time that I have. I can really deeply appreciate how much work was involved in putting those together. There's an incredible amount of things to comprehend with yourself, and to work out. It's neat how it's all laid out and to certain modules, and you work your way through the process, and it does work.
It does work. Yeah.
You know, but it's an incredible amount of work and beautifully done. I may add at the same
I'm
time.
I'm glad everybody works really hard on it.
Now we've touched base on the community, like when you got started here. Now, how do you feel? Where do you feel the community is with you now?
They seem to be pretty strong with us. Like it's always still a struggle. There's people who still have a hard time with the idea of dealing with processes that support adults who've been victimized by abuse. So there's still that attitude is still out there. So we got to keep battling that. But we keep on with that. But we're also, one of the things we're doing right now is building quite a large it's called a transformative healing garden out there, outside the gatehouse. And that's going to have artifacts and symbols from organizations around the world celebrated and built right into the garden. But we're working with the Business Improvement Association of this area. We're working with the city council, counselors from this area. We're working with the college and university to get students, volunteers, and all that. So we always make it a communal thing. Everything comes back to the sense of community, because at the heart of community is relationship building. And we don't want to be just some little silo somewhere. We want everybody involved in it. And that's what we keep on working at.
Wow, that's incredible, because without the community, a lot of things just don't stay together, right?
We're a charitable organization.
Yeah.
We have no core funding from any agency anywhere. We get grants, like a short-term grant, but we don't have any core funding. And the reason for that is, my belief system was, that would keep us engaged in community. We just didn't want to become another program attached to some organization. We wanted to be free to figure out what we have to do ongoingly, so that somebody, you have all kinds of social service programs that get cut all the time in different government that's come into positions of power, and they say, okay, we don't believe in that, so we're cutting that program. We never have to worry about that. On the other hand, we have to worry about trying to figure out how to generate the income for everybody to be involved, but we always do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we always do it, and we're the only, as far as I know, like, I may be wrong about this, but I believe that of any program anywhere in the country that works with the issue of childhood sexual abuse, we're the only place that there's no fee attached to anything we do.
That's pretty incredible.
That's a testament to community.
That's pretty incredible. What keeps you grounded? How do you keep yourself grounded?
I sincerely believe in the sort of the alchemy of meditation. I really believe in meditation and breathing processes. I believe that when I say alchemy, what I mean by that is, if I can slow myself down long enough to look at all my fears, all the things that I mistakes I make, all parts of who will make me up as a person, and I just spend some time watching that and being gentle with it, that I find that it just takes me to a really solid place, a very gentle place, but a position of strength, I guess you could say, in dealing with the stresses that you have to deal with. So I just think that there's an awful lot of power in the power of meditating. And we talk about that a lot at the gatehouse here. We talk about it in terms of neuroplasticity, how it affects the brain, how it affects transmissions in the brain. I just think I say this to every facilitator, that when you come to the gatehouse, you can't just get out of your car and walk in and start facilitating a group.
It's not that easy at all.
And so you've got all these processes to do and to get yourself grounded, so that if things do get a little bit off the rails a bit, that you're grounded enough that you can be gentle with it and not reactive to it. So that's for me, that's the grounding piece. And then the other piece is having moments like this. Like, if you think about it, the two of us are alive and we're having a conversation. We both could have easily been dead early on in our story, physically dead, right? We could have taken our lives or whatever crazy things were going on in our dance that could have taken us away. But somehow we navigated through all of that stuff, and here we are having a conversation. It's this kind of conversation that keeps me grounded too. The being in the presence of somebody like yourself who does what you do, that grounds me. It makes everything valuable, everything worthwhile. Like, I just think, boy, this is good. So that's another piece that grounds me.
That's good, because that was the next question I was going to get to anyway. That's perfect. Okay, tell me about the gatehouse staff.
I guess to describe the staff would be to describe magic. That the staff here, they go beyond any job description. They have a way of making it feel like you've been invited into one of the warmest places on the planet to have your conversation. That's what they do. We have three full-time staff who all come from a stance of empathy. They're very, very bright. They're incredibly knowledgeable in the world of technology and connecting with people, as I said earlier, around the world. But they know all that stuff. But they make it so safe for somebody when they first come up the house the very first time that they come in and they'll say to them, would you like a cup of tea or coffee? You sit down at the kitchen table or at a couch in the living room, and you're made to feel authentically welcomed. So that's what the staff does here. Then the other thing that they do is they're constantly engaged in processes of raising awareness about this whole issue throughout the community, throughout everywhere, like worldwide, and they are relentless. You've seen them in action.
Oh, yes.
Like their energy is like beyond belief.
Beyond belief. It's,
yeah.
It's hard. It's incredible,
yeah,
just to watch them in action.
That's right. And so there's like, and you think about it, there are three full-time staff, but they have 56 volunteers. So that's like, in this house, that's basically close to 60 people, right? 56, 59 people. And yet, they somehow just make it feel like, as it ought to be, this is a house where anybody can come and tell the most terrible stories and get really strong again. And that's what the staff does here. They're remarkable.
Yeah, and totally incredible,
yeah,
staff. Now, you kind of touched base a little bit about Mark. Now I'm curious, how do you do you describe your method of research for yourself in regards to how you've done this for your own method of research? Do you have a certain way you do, like you go into books, you go online, or you talk to the masses,
yeah,
or do you have a particular
what we do
method of research? I mean, for,
yeah,
yourself personally,
research in terms of what?
And research to this matter of childhood
abuse.
Oh,
we do everything. Like we're getting a stronger tie with the college and university here, where they'll have formal academic research done in terms of quantitative and qualitative analysis, sort of scientific research methods about childhood sexual abuse. We're doing that kind of piece. But honestly, for me, the research is in what we would call the narrative. That is simply creating a space for the narrative to come out, for the person's story to come out. And so out of that comes all kinds of ideas. For example, Mark, he comes in here, he's going through processes, he comes up with an idea.
Because I'm using Mark for some of my research,
exactly,
my statistics.
Yeah, and so he comes up with this idea about connecting around the world, like internationally, here are the techniques you can do. Well, in other programming, if he was just viewed, for example, just as a client, the staff isn't going to say to this client, oh, you're affecting the way we do our program, and we can't have that. You know, like that, you're a client, we're the program. Here, what we say is, if you have an idea, this might be something worth looking into, and we follow it. So we follow people's storylines. That's what we do. It's just that simple.
Let's touch base a little bit on sexuality.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we're here for abuse. I mean, sexuality, with my experience with doing the groups, sexuality has always been a topic that's come and gone.
Yeah.
Now, do you see that, I have a point to this question,
yeah.
it kind of caught me off guard here,
sure.
I kind of lost it, but as far as sexuality is concerned, do you see that with all the different, let's say, I want to be politically correct here,
yeah.
But do you see that with, let's say, for example, like heterosexuals,
yeah.
Gays, transgenders,
yeah.
Different cultures. Do you find that there's really a big, as far as their ideas are concerned, in regards to whether it be sexual abuse or sexuality, do you find that there's a big variance in how they think in comparison to, let's say, how we think here in North America, or as a whole in Toronto, or as a whole in Calgary, Ottawa, wherever, right?
Yeah, I think there's a mixture of it everywhere in terms of you might have, we were just talking to people from Bolivia, and they were talking about how in Bolivia there seems to be as a theme in that culture of perhaps not a sense of care for children and women in the way you might want it to have it to be equal. In other words, they're looked down upon in the cultures. Well, somebody could say, well, I can see it happening in different households here in downtown Toronto. So, but culturally, maybe there is a bit, at times there might be some distinguishable differences. For example, in another country that we're connected with, Nigeria, over there, it's against the law to be gay. You can be convicted of that, of something as natural as being gay. So culturally, yeah, there are different elements around the world. When it comes into the issue of abuse, however, my belief is that abuse happens everywhere, regardless of the cultures. It's more like trying to understand where collectively we come from to want to hurt sexually, in a sexual way, a child. Like, what is that about all of us, right? So, yes, we could say there are some variances, there are some differences in our cultures. However, I still think we got to just step back and just look at what is the experience of having been abused. What happened? What were the things that happened, regardless of what country I come from, and what gender I happen to be, so that I can just look at the experience, so that it would be with the experience, right? Because right now in Canada, for example, we still have an attitude that only men sexually abuse. That's pretty much it. Even in legislation, it was written that seemed to be leaving out males as being possibly sexually assaulted. The language seemed to be different, that it was only females that would be sexually assaulted. That was right, and it looked like that in legislation in our country. So we want to examine that, step back, and say, what is simply the dynamic of somebody feeling that they have this compunction or whatever it is to do something to a child in a way that can cause the child pain? So that is one thing. There are so many nuances to this, right? That it's very, very, very difficult. We have people who've been sexually abused who've grown up and said, well, I really loved the person who sexually abused me. I admired them. I didn't realize it was even wrong until I was like in my late teens or early 20s and started to realize it's affected me in other ways that maybe aren't helpful for me. So I'm saying that as an example to show how there are just so many nuances to all of this stuff. So my thinking is we just step back from everything, from the notion of sexuality, gender, culture, and we observe all of those dynamic dimensions, all of them, and say, how do they weave themselves into helping shape who we are as people? And that's what I, that's the best that I can come up with at this point in time. And I also believe we have a heck of a long way to go to explore it. So you hit on a really important topic that has to be really looked
at. Global.
Yeah, it's global.
It's global. It's not just here. And as I was showing you, I as much as I displeased being on social media, like Twitter and Facebook and that
sure.
sort of thing. Well, I've been on Twitter now, and I just did it just for the heck of it, just to see what kind of response I get out of it. I was more than quite open. I was very open about what my purpose was about
sure.
being on there.
Yeah.
I'm not on there to socialize. Or,
yeah.
Well, I am to a certain degree, but only related to this matter
yeah.
of sexual abuse.
Yeah.
And I'm just totally blown away how much response I've gotten.
Yeah.
And I'm not
Fantastic.
Just talking about here in Canada. I'm talking
yeah.
about internationally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like in the UK.
Yeah.
USA.
Yeah.
Africa.
Yeah.
As examples, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just amazed on kind of how many different cultures and like they have their own issues in regards
oh,
to
my
kind
gosh,
of like
yeah.
the question I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And it'll be very interesting to see how their final outcome of it is as ours. In
yeah.
the future.
Like it's like when you think about our cultures, we in Canada, I was just saying this the other day, like I really get a lot frustrated with the history that I was taught as a kid growing up. I was born in Northern Ontario, Kirkland Lake. I grew up in Canada, I'm Canadian, and I didn't know anything about what was happening in the residential schools under the sponsorship of our federal government and the abuse that children under that residential school system that went right up into the late 70s, early 80s in Canada.
Like what happened to our Native and Indian
communities.
Absolutely. That's a
really
bad example of that.
Unbelievable, right? And we often think about these other faraway lands, or right now we're hearing about a particular country in Nigeria, and the 200 girls that have been kidnapped,
yeah.
right? And thinking that's horrible, and of course it is categorically horrible. But right here in our country, we did horrible things to the Aboriginal population. And also, culturally we did it to them, and in every other fashion we did it to them. So it happens, I guess my point is that it happens everywhere, and that if we don't stop and just say it is pervasive everywhere, we get seduced again into not really taking a closer look at it. If that helps, you know.
Oh, it does. It okay. does. It's. What I'm probably most blown away about the whole thing about this is that, like, even going on something like Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm amazed how much talk and chatter is going on right now about all this.
Yeah.
And for all these years, it's been it's just nothing but hush, hush, hush,
yeah.
hush. And now it's. Like I really feel that it's just the beginning of
yeah
of I don't know what you want to call it, but it's finally going to be dealt with in some way or fashion, whether it's here in Canada or if it's in the U.S. Well, they are dealing with it in their own ways,
mm-hmm.
but hopefully with us talking about it and other people talking about it, they'll deal with it in a better manner, because
mm-hmm.
which I feel is totally inadequate right now as far as in this country is concerned. I can't really say much about other countries because I don't live there, which
yeah.
wouldn't really be fair.
Yeah.
But the stigma about talking about it as being stuck in a closet, it's slowly becoming by the wayside,
yeah.
and people are finally addressing this. Because when I think about, well, I have a daughter and a granddaughter.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to worry about them.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
you have children as well.
Yeah.
So if this is stuck in the back of our minds, And sitting with their listening audience as well.
Yeah.
I could not. How could anybody fathom that happening
yeah.
to them as well, right?
Yeah.
I just can't fathom it. I just don't see it.
Well, doing what you're doing, Stuart, to me is like it's letting in more light to see what's really needs to be seen. The more we can get so safe that we can talk about this stuff, the more light is going to happen. Because actually what the light is, really, it's our voice. It's a metaphor for our voice. The more we open things up, that we can talk honestly without getting into a stance of I'm right and you're wrong, like just simply to start the conversation, we'll start to understand things a bit more. My dream about all of this, from what you're doing, when you say about all the internet, the chatter on Twitter and the internet and so on, is that it starts to stir things up and we start to talk about it. But my hope too is we talk about it mindfully, that we spend time not quick to judge one way or the other, but simply say, I'll give you an example. We were just talking about this at the conference the other day, and somebody about people in a room were offenders and victims, and somebody said, well, what do you mean you're going to have a pedophile babysitting your child at home? And of course nobody's talking about that. But if I said the word pedophile, like we have a stereotypical view of a pedophile.
Oh, how dare we ever?
Right? But we don't have the picture of the 12-year-old babysitter who's just taken a babysitter course and is the one who's actually doing something inappropriately with a child. We don't think in those terms, right? So we've got to stop and just pause for just a few minutes and just sort of take a look at the picture and be present enough that we can start to hear better. Hear with a real listen with a real intensity. Give it enough space that everybody can have a conversation, then I think we're going to go in a really good way. And that's what I really love about what you're doing, because I hope it invites people to say, I want to talk about this, right? It's not, we don't deserve to be pushed away in a closet if we've
been abused. Absolutely, and that's exactly what I'm hoping it will happen.
Yeah.
Say your voice.
Yeah.
And I know I sure as hell I'm going to be saying my voice.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And hopefully people will get the same idea and follow along with me and everybody else that I know that's gone through this. I'm speaking with Art Lockhart, the founder of the Gatehouse, and we're coming to a close very soon in regards to our conversation, but one thing I would like to ask you about before we come to a close, where do you see the Gatehouse in the future?
I see it as it's a really good question. That I see it as a place of celebration. I see it as a place where people can come to celebrate that they've gone through their own levels and experiences of transformation, and knowing that transformation doesn't mean it's an end point. It's simply, I've grown this far. So that's what I see the Gatehouse as being, just that, a place where you can come and celebrate. It's not a place of heaviness. It's a place of lightness of being. That's what I hope happens, so that other places might get started along the same idea in their own ways that are unique to wherever they happen to be, whether it's Bolivia or Germany or whatever, that there's a place that's so light, like light is emanating from it, that people come and talk. What just happened just in the last 2 seconds, actually, when we started the conversation, we had to have the door closed, right, because there are people in the house.
Yeah.
By the end of the conversation, right now there's just the two of us in the house, and what also happened is the door is open, and there's this light coming in the door. It's coming up right behind you, Stu. So to me, that's incredibly powerful metaphor for what you just did today. That we started off in the room talking, having other people quiet so we could have this time. And then as it goes along, the door is open and we're talking, just two guys talking casually, gently, hopefully with some measure of nurturing, some kinds of new ways of looking at things, and the light is shining in. To me, that's that's unbelievable. So that's what I would want the house to be down the road, is a place that light shines in and shines out from, and that is a place that invites people to come and talk.
Now, what about yourself? Where do you see yourself maybe 5-10 years down the road? Now, you're still greatly involved in the Gatehouse. You're not the director anymore. Brad Hutchins is taking over.
Which is fantastic.
He's a fantastic gentleman.
Yeah.
We're so lucky to have him.
Yeah.
Now, what about yourself? Now, I know you're still here. You're still involved. You're still involved in training. So what about your future? Where do you see yourself?
I think still staying involved with the idea of doing the training for the facilitation, facilitating the section on within the overall program, that one component around the sacred path. I'm going to continue to do that.
Great.
And then I'm going to continue to be a support for the facilitators beyond the training, getting together, working with them on writing the material and putting that into a book. So that's what I'm going to be doing right now. And we've evolved it into a partners program even now, for partners of people who've been
involved. Yeah, we never really touched base on
that.
We've got a little bit more time here. Can you talk just a little bit about that before we close?
Yeah, one of the things that happened was we got some phone calls for people who were the partners of the men or women coming to the gatehouse and saying, something's happening with my partner. There seem to be change in what, and a lot of the change is really for the good, but it's also confusing to me, because if you've got a person who was really, say, anxious or depressed or didn't want to talk, and 8 weeks into a program, this person's talking about things that he held back forever or she held back forever, it can be overwhelming. Like, you want to be there, but it's also overwhelming. So we got, one of the folks came up with an idea that said, why don't we put a partners program together? So the husbands and wives, boyfriends and girlfriends, whomever, whatever the relationships are, the immediate partner, they come out and they talk about what it's like to be a partner of somebody who's going through the process of discovering what abuse has done to them. And so that has taken off now. And so we're working on that as well. And it's really revealing, really, really powerful. And I don't know of many partners programs in...
I haven't seen anything on the internet or anything at all.
I don't know. So I think we might be starting... That's a new thing that we're starting here, too.
Yeah, that's great. Because I've heard great things just from in the house about it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of nice that we touched base on that, because another thing that's very important as far as our any survivor's recovery, if you're in a relationship, whether you're... regardless of your sexual preference...
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where you're coming from. My point being is that each side has to understand.
Yeah.
And it's great that the person getting the healing, but what about the other person who went through all this crap with
you?
They need to understand more.
Yeah.
And from my experience, with my own past experiences, whenever I've said what I've gone through, the other individual had absolutely no clue what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and it's so hard.
Yeah. It's very, very hard, you know. And for the response that I've heard from other people coming to the house in regards to this, it was absolutely fantastic. So, again, it's another thing that's very important in your healing process.
Yeah, we keep trying to figure out new things. Like, we just keeps unfolding.
Expanding. But all in a beautiful, positive manner, if I may say.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I've been speaking with Eric Lockhart, the founder of the Great House, of the Gatehouse, and I am so... ecstatic that I've had this time with you, because you're such a busy man, too, on top of that, between teaching at the college and the gatehouse.
Yeah.
So I'm very, very grateful that you took the time to come and talk with me about this, and everybody on the internet at the same time. And I'm hoping in the future we get a chance to talk again.
That'd be great.
And again, thank you.
Thank you, Stuart. It was really beautiful.
It was
beautiful.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Good evening, I'm back. I hope you enjoyed the interview I just had with Art. This has been, certainly been interesting. I've been really fortunate to have the chance to spend the time with Art to tell us how he got started with the Gatehouse, and wow. Anyway, I'm going to talk a little bit more about why I'm here, why I started this, kind of like what I tried to do in the beginning, so I'm having a few chuckles along the way, just trying to figure out how this stuff actually all works. I can't believe I'm actually doing this, but anyway, nevertheless, what brought me to the Gatehouse, obviously, was my abuse, and I was on a road to nowhere, I guess is a good way to explain it, and self-destruction, everything from drugs, alcohol, bad relationships. What I mean by bad relationships, I'm talking about everything from relationships with a partner, like a relationship with a woman, to friendship. And when I was down and out, I pretty much at my wit's end. What I mean by that is, you know, the thoughts of suicide were pretty much in place. And so I sought help again, because
I have sought help in the past, and there's been really nothing out there to help in this manner. So I went online, and I found this place in Gate in Calgary. I wish I could remember the name off the top of my head right now, but anyway, they directed me to the Gatehouse in Toronto, and here I am now. I came here about 4 years ago. I went through the programs, meaning what we call phase one, so which is basically an introduction to your your therapy, I guess you want to call it that, or group therapy, and it takes you through a bunch of things, for example, from isolation to belonging. It covers triggers, covered anger, emotional, covered addictions to relationships, to abuse. We talk about your inner child. We talk about loss and grief. We talk about positive boundaries. We talk about your shame and your guilt. We talk about resilience and skip path. We also, you know, everybody has things they want to talk about. It really basically what it does is it digs right into your past, and we talk about things that you've got buried for all those years that's created this behavior that that we do. And we like to, put it this way, we like to bury things. And one of the great things about the Gatehouse is provided with me is that I've been able to actually bring up this stuff that I've had buried in the past and bring it light to an understanding where I can actually say, well, hey, well, I've actually started to feel again, for one thing, for example. I can actually not feel scared or have that fear about dealing with things which I've had trouble dealing with in the past, like such as relationships, for example. Just the fear of wanting to deal with things, I guess is the best way to put it. I mean, you can put that into a whole bunch of categories, what different people might do in regards to how they might behave, like I've said already, like drugs, alcohol, relationships, whether it be with a girlfriend or your wife, your kids, all kinds of different things. And it really, really, you know, obviously everybody's different in their own way, how they're going to behave and how they're going to react. Basically, the outcome of it is that it's just bad behavior, it gives you bad social skills. I mean, it's easy to, one thing I've always did myself personally, I was always very good at hiding things. And I've never, when somebody ever asked me how I was, well, I always put on a happy face and never pretended that I had this deep, deep guilt and shame that I carried from my abuse in the past. And how I carried on, well, it was very easy to hide it. I mean, to myself it was hard, but to everybody else it was easy to hide. I mean, I put on a happy face and walk around like nothing is really happening. But the bottom line, it's really, really, really held me back from the things that I truly deserved, and meaning like some kind of a happy, meaningful life. But that's the hard part about it is, I guess, was trying to face those fears and actually feeling like I belong now, you know, and that I've never had that feeling yet. Until the last few years, within the last couple of years, I should say, that I've gone through these steps with the Gatehouse to help me feel like I belong and help me realize who I really truly am. And one of the things, or actually I shouldn't say one of the things, but many of the things we're going to talk about through time ahead is these feelings that causes you to do this self-destruction. And we're going to talk a lot about statistics in regards to, first off, I should say before I go even further about this, I mean, this show is neither political nor religious. So I'm not going to pick on anybody in regards to, I have to say, whether it be at a government level or laws. I'm going to try to stay quite neutral and stay focused on what we're going to be talking about, what we talk about, or in regards to personal transformation, moving forward and getting out of the past, which is a very hard thing to do for most of us, and I'm going to be here and talking about it to show you that, yes, you can move on. You don't have to stay stuck in the past. You don't have to hold on to that interfere. You don't, first off, and you don't have to be, you don't have to, you just, that anger, like, there's better ways of dealing with that anger. And that's one thing I have, I've had lots of anger. And I tell you, my anger is not like it used to be. But I tell you, I still have it. And sometimes, well, it still gets the best of me. Nevertheless, I deal with it better than I used to deal with it. You know, and one of the big things about with anger and that fear is you run away. And I've done lots of that. I'm tired of doing that. I want to deal with this head on. I want the world to know that this is a huge problem, and I do not want to sit back anymore and take this anymore. I want to talk about it. I want the public to realize that you don't have to hold it anymore. You don't have to have that shame and fear anymore. You can actually let it go. You don't have to hold on to that. You can actually move on. And you will feel so much better. Like, I feel much better than I did 4 years ago. I feel better than I did 2 years ago. I feel better than I did a year ago. It's been a slow progression. And I want to show you ways that you can move forward. You don't have to stay stuck in the past. So what I mean, when I say I have lots to talk about, I have lots to talk about. And like I say, the show is not going to be political or religious. We just want to talk about the problem at hand, and that is letting go of this crap that we hold on to from the past. There's lots of resources out there. I shouldn't say there's lots of resources out there. There's resources out there. Well, I should say there's resources out there. They're sparse and few and far between. I'm lucky to be part of what's here, and for what I've seen internationally, well, there's help elsewhere, such as in the U.S., U.K. But even there, I've noticed from my research through Twitter and Facebook, it's limited. There is support groups that offer help. Some you pay for, some you don't pay for, like the Gatehouse, for example. You don't have to pay for help here. You can come here, you know, you just come up the stairs and you come inside, and you know, you don't pay for anything, but they offer you, you know, coffee and cookies. I mean, that's great, isn't it? And that's a good thing. That's comforting, you know. And the programs, like, for example, they're 16 weeks long for the phase one, and for the phase two, they're 16 weeks long as well. And I'm going to keep reiterating that programs are long, but the process is long. And in order to dig deep down into your soul to find out what's going on, you have to do that, as I've learned myself. And if you're ever given a chance to come here and partake in this program that the Gatehouse has to offer, you'll see what I'm talking about. Now, what I like about what's out there now, I'm amazed with how many different types of support groups are there. Like, I've been surfing through Twitter, watching on Twitter. I'm amazed what's out there. And you can even go on Twitter and you can get support. That's pretty good. You know, you don't even have to talk to anybody live. You don't have to give your name or nothing. And that's the stigma with this whole problem, is that you have this problem, you don't want to talk about it. You're ashamed. It makes perfect sense that you wouldn't want to do that, because I've done the same thing. And the best thing to do, I've learned, is you can't hold it in anymore. You have to talk about it. The more you talk about it, the better you're going to feel about it. It's been a slow process for me, and I want to keep plugging away at it as long as it takes for me to get past some of these things I'm still dealing with. Like I said, I still have some issues, but you know, I've talked a little bit about myself, or actually a lot. I feel like I've talked a lot about myself, but I really want to focus on people that are abroad. Like, for example, like people live up north. Well, I'm in Toronto, but I'm talking about up north, like Northern Ontario, Northern Canada, different places of isolation that don't have this kind of support or peer support, which is very... it's different from, I guess you can say, from the typical source of treatment or the clinical kind, but nevertheless, I found it very effective. It was very effective with me, and I found it very effective with others. And there's lots lots to be learned about it, meaning you can learn a lot from yourself, especially if you had it buried back as long as you've had it, as like I've had it buried in 40 plus years. And that's a long time for anybody to be holding on to that. You see me just run. Oh yeah, there we go. Okay. And what's interesting is, like, for example, there's books out there, self-help books. Like, for example, Building Your House of Self-Respect. It's a workbook by Tom Wilkin, as an example of self-help. And over the next weeks or months, eventually we're going to dip into that. And if I'm lucky enough, I'm going to have an interview with Tom, and we'll talk about his books that he's written on in regards to self-help. Dead air. How do you like that? Hi. One of the great things about recovery is that when you dip into your past, you realize you've got all these things, all these feelings have been buried away for all these years. And you realize that you have feelings. You dig them up, it hurts like hell. But when you figure out what they are, you can process them and realize that, well, number one, you are human, and number two, it was never your fault to begin with, what happened to you. And you can build off of that. Like, some people like to journal, some people just like to talk. And talking is a big thing, really, really big thing. I know it's done wonder for me. I've kind of done both. I've talked to other people that have done both or just journaled. And it helps you recognize where pardon the way I put this, but your inner faults are. And it gives you a building block to move on, to work on. Anyway, this was my first test pilot. And it was a bit of a struggle for me. And I know I made lots of boos and bahs. And I've learned from that. And I thought I was prepared. I guess I'm not as prepared as I thought I was. And it's taught me some good things, like pushing buttons I shouldn't have pushed. So I'm going to sign off, and I'm going to come back next week, and I will be talking more. I want to talk about statistics, about sexual crime in Canada. I'm not really going to focus internationally, but I am going to talk about it in Canada, which to me is more important because that's where I'm from, so I'm going to cover that, and then I will dip into internationally at some time or date later on. But I'm also going to cover the process I went through to, like the first 16 weeks I went through to get me to the level, to a certain level, and then I will talk about another 16 weeks that got me to another greater level and how that got me into where I am now, where I'm talking. I'm lucky enough now that I've gone through the programs, and now I'm facilitating other participants on a peer-to-peer level, and I feel that I have lots to offer with my experience, not only being part of the Gatehouse, but my past experiences, whether they be bad or good, and they are a good basis, as far as myself is concerned, a good learning basis of what you shouldn't do. And I'm going to talk about that. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give out an email address, and I'm going to want suggestions, and I may even take a few calls and suggestions on what we could talk about, or what concerns you about your abuse and how to deal with it. And maybe I can help, maybe I can't. Maybe I can give you I can find out something that's close to where you live, that maybe there's a program somewhere around you where you live. I have no idea where you live, but that's where I'm going to find out when you call in or email me. And that's what we'll find out. But I think I'm going to leave it as it is for now. This is my first stab at this, and and I made it. I got through. And I wish to thank you all for all who are listening and patient with my blunders along the way. And I can't wait for next week. So wish you all the best, and thank you. Bye for now.